I'm very excited for this episode of the podcast. I have a good friend of mine, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, thank you first off for the congratulations on my grad school admission. It was wonderful to hear from you. And it meant a lot to me that you, of all people, reached out. And this is the third time we've spoken, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. Third, fourth, something like that.
Yeah. Well, I think I consider you a good friend of mine now. I don't know if I'm allowed to.
No, it's great.
I've enjoyed all of our conversation. We were just talking, you know, a little bit before recording. But for those who haven't read my, I think, two articles on you, do you want to give a brief synopsis of your career thus far?
Oh, sure. I'm a film composer, film TV composer. And I got into this after having a career in music engineering and then a career, not even a career in music engineering. I stopped it before the career started. I was a runner at a recording studio, which shows up in the Kanye documentary on Netflix. I had left the year before. And then I went to work for a record label that turned into Sony Records. We got bought out, merged with, and worked in the international department there. And then after about 8 years there, 8 or 9 years there, I wanted to do something that put, I just felt like I was consuming and I wanted to put something, I know I say this every time, this sounds heavy handed, but I wanted to put something back into the earth. I wanted to contribute something to culture in some way. And so I decided to become a composer, which was something I'd never done before. I was like, hey, let's move to LA and write music, which also wasn't something I'd really done before. And here I am, 11 years later.
Yeah.
And it's still happening.
And sorry, not to interrupt you, but there's some like popping coming on, I think, from your side. I don't know if you want to try.
That's maybe my zipper.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've done that too.
I'll go low over the. No, I won't do that. Sorry. Is no, that no, no. better?
I think so. I guess we'll have to see. No, but
I can also take the headphones off if.
Yeah, whatever.
It's up to you.
Yeah, okay. I think it's fine for now. But yeah. Oh, sorry. I got distracted by the sweater.
Oh, sorry.
But I'm sorry. And you talked about your journey, and yes, of course. And I think my dad knows you from the Carbonaro Effect, which you worked on. Was that the first? Was it the first three seasons, roughly?
First, they did a weird thing where they would order episodes. It was like first two or three seasons. It was the first 60 episodes. So whatever that relates to.
Okay. And what is exactly, cause I know like with that show, there was a lot of like the weird sound effects, right? Did you that too, right? Or is it?
The sound effects, I just did the score. Okay. You know, just you barely hear it when you watch the show. Cause it's all because there's so much noise from the environment, but there was music there. Which no, that show was a lot of fun too. That was one of the shows I would work on and laugh the whole time. And Michael and everyone that worked on that, they were just, it was an amazing project to be a part of. I mean, it really was. It was a lot of work and like, it was all on weekends. So my weekends were shot for 6 months at a time.
Yeah, and can you tell me a little bit about that process? I remember with your music was also used on Buying Alaska, right? So then I think, mm-hmm. I think the first time I asked you about this, you said that it was your music, but that was then bought for the show. Is that what it was?
Well, yeah. So when I first started trying to get into this, and this is going to be a long way to get to this answer. When I first started trying to get into this, I heard about some friends that were creating a TV show. And it was about tow truck drivers on South Beach. And I was like, oh, well, that will sound like this. And so I started writing music and sending it to these people that didn't really know me. I was like, hey, I heard you created the show. And one of the pieces I wrote was this kind of bluesy, swampy thing. And I sent it over. They're like, absolutely not. That is not what we're looking for. And so of all the pieces, I try not to let anything go to waste. So I had a bunch of music left over and I put it into a music library that shops music out to other TV shows and stuff like that. And that got picked. That one piece that wasn't used for the show that became South Beach Tow, that got picked for Buying Alaska, which was a nice surprise to find out that, you know, I'd be getting a check for something that I didn't work directly on, which is a lovely feeling.
Well, and does that happen often? Because I feel like that's something that if it happened, I wouldn't know about it. Like I wouldn't know that somebody's music just got picked up.
Oh yeah, there's a whole subset of composing called production music, and I do a lot of that because of where I'm at career wise, and just because of the nature of this industry, I work on just about everything, and I try to get as many sources of income happening as possible. So like the movies that I generally do aren't a budget that's going to keep me alive. And so what I'll do is I do a lot of work on these reality TV shows, and they'll pay money up front, but then every time they play, there's royalties coming from it. And then what I'll do is I will also work for music libraries and put music in their libraries, and then they get picked for, I mean, I think I have music in, outside of the work I've actively done for a TV show, I think I have music in about 500 episodes of TV from these libraries. And so then, and you'll get a dollar here, a dollar there, but over time that, you know, helps keep the lights on, you know, with enough kind of in the pipeline. And I do the same with trailers. Like today I'm working on some stuff for a trailer music library. It's the same thing, that they'll just take it out and shop it. And then 6 months later, they're like, oh yeah, your music was used in this. I'm like, oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I think I saw that on your website, if I'm not mistaken, that you had music used for one of the Thor movies.
Yeah, Dark World. Not for the movie, for the trailer.
Oh, for the trailer, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, and that piece of music was also used in RoboCop, and it was also used in something else. And so one piece of music like kept me alive for a year, which was nice.
That's amazing.
And I wrote it once, and then they just grab it and they chop it up.
Right.
Yeah. But that's fine. That's creating music in a vacuum. I mean, there's something nice about working on something actually in front of you, working on a movie, and you know, something, but look, any way you cut it, I get to go to the studio and make noise, and someone pays me for it. And that's a beautiful thing.
And how does it differ with, I think, video games, right? Because you're working on one now. And with video games, they're so much longer. It's not a 2-hour movie or 90-minute movie. This is a game that, you know, so do you compose like 10 pieces and then it's used repetitively throughout the game? I'm just so curious about that.
Well, the game I'm working, the game company I'm working for is a company called Glowstick Entertainment. And so they do games like, they're an indie studio, and they're going to become console games soon, but right now they're like on Steam and something else. I purposely don't play games, and I probably shouldn't be saying that, but I purposely don't play games because I know I would be distracted and never get anything done in life. So one game is called Dark Deception. Another one's called Monsters and Mortals. And then soon I'm going to be working on the next installment of Evil Nun, which is Evil Nun, The Broken Mask. And so for like Dark Deception, I've been working on that for about 5 years, and they'll release it in chapters. I'll write, you know, 15 to 20 pieces of music per chapter. But what it is they'll just say, here's the character, here's this. And it's like 1 minute to 2 minute loops. And so, and for animatics and cinematics and stuff like that, I'll write to the picture and that doesn't loop. But the stuff like the in-game where you're being chased or something like that, it has to loop seamlessly, which is something I had to figure out how to do for the game.
Yeah, and I feel like you have to be so creative to be able to think of that kind of stuff on the spot. Because I don't know, what does it look like? Say if it's a cinematic in the video game, mm-hmm. and you get the video, I assume. So then are you just like playing, I mean, I guess you have some sort of, you have a base, I'm sure, right, for the game. Is there like an overall theme that you have that like recurs in the score?
There are some that I just kind of stumbled upon, but it's more like for this game, it's more like a sound, like there's a vibe, which is kind of noise, like the scary strings and noisy. But for this game, honestly, I've only had to do one cinematic. Everything else has been them sending me, this is what, like, just like a picture. This is what depending upon where they're at, it's like either this is what the level is going to look like, this is what the villains are going to look like, not villains, monsters are going to look like, and this is what's going on, and this is the direction we want you to go, and then they'll just send me off to the races on that. And it's fun. You have a lot more where you don't have to like hit stuff, like when you're working on a movie, it's kind of like, or a TV show, it's kind of like, well, here we have to hit this, here we have to hit this, here we have to hit this, and you have to kind of bend the music and the time to like hit these different things. It's kind of freeing to not have that, but it's also kind of hard to not have that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think before we were, you know, we've talked a lot about your journey. You shared that a little bit, but I find it so fascinating that you, I don't want to say go, I don't want to say went against your parents' wishes, but you took an alternate path, right? Because I think you had said that your brother is a doctor, right? And then, you know, I mean, and that's such a different field than I'm going to do something. Because I think anything in arts is harder to tell your parents, oh, I want to do writing or I want to do composing, right? And it's, you know, you talked about your transitions from, I don't, you know, like music engineering and producing, and you know, it's taking you a long way. And I'm just curious, as a college, you know, student, you know that I'm graduating in a couple of months. But I feel like there's a lot of kids that don't, you know, maybe don't not I don't want to say don't know what they want to do, but it's hard for them to like fully embrace that and just take that risk. And I think your story speaks to that very well.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I kept completely changing my life into my mid-30s, careers and stuff like that. And I had a couple of things where I was on a career path. And my parents, oddly, they weren't not supportive. They were supportive. They didn't understand it. And so when I went to college for, I went for jazz performance, jazz-based performance. That's a career. So I went for that and then changed because, you know, it was one of these things, like you had mentioned why you made the decisions to go to the college you went to. I'm not gonna. But so I was gonna be a rock star. I, spoiler alert, I'm not. So the band I was in was like a big-ish local band in Miami. You know, we'd play shows where 600 people would come out and stuff like that. And we would get every show would be at least 150 people, which is big for a small high school band in Miami. And so I wanted to stay in Miami around where this band was going to be. And so I went to the University of Miami and I didn't pay attention when I was applying. And so I was like, yeah, I want to go for bass. Yeah, I want to study bass because that's what I played. And during orientation, they said, welcome to the University of Miami. Because that's where I went, University of Miami. They're like, welcome to the University of Miami Jazz School of Music. And I was like, oh, wait, what? Jazz? What's that? And then like all the, God, what was I thinking? But like all the pieces started making sense. Like I went back and started thinking about the audition. I was like, oh, that's why they had me play this. And that's why they wanted me to play that. It didn't make any sense. And so, and I was like, I had to figure something out. And so I got out of that week one. I got out of that, went to like just a general like Bachelor of Music degree that had no emphasis on anything. And at the end of that semester, I went to the music engineering department because that seemed like something that would make sense that I could do something with. And I needed to have gotten like a 1450. I don't know what the SATs are like now, but it only went up to 1600 then. So I had to get at least like a 1400 on the SATs and I had to have this type of GPA and stuff like that. And I went and knocked on this guy's door. I was like, hey, I want to come in the music engineering department. He said, well, how did you do on the SATs? I was like, gosh, I don't remember, but I do still. 26 years later, I don't know what my parents were thinking, but I had a show. Like my band was playing a show the night before the SATs.
Oh no.
I was like half asleep through the SATs. I think maybe I got a 1050,
Okay.
maybe an 1100. And I was like, honestly, I don't remember. And he said, oh, okay, well, what part did you do better on? I was like, math. Yeah, I did better on math. Granted, in high school, I'd taken 2 years of college calculus. I took 2 years of AP calculus and I didn't get any AP credits. Like I bombed those tests too. But I kind of fudged that. I was like, but I did 2 years of AP calculus, you know? And so they're like, yeah, come on, welcome aboard. And so I kind of lied my way in, but I thrived there. And it was like I was saying before, is that like it doesn't matter what you did before, if you can get your foot in the door, it's kind of a level playing field. At least in the academic world, right? Like in the real world, relationships matter, stuff like that. But it was great. And the people I went to school with, it was an amazing experience. Like one of the guys, like now records. He didn't do Encanto, but he did the score. He recorded the scores and the songs, like as an engineer for Moana and Frozen and Frozen 2 and Toy Story. And a bunch of them have gone on to become like these big engineers. And one's this amazing author who became like a New York Times bestseller. I mean, and he also, I mean, and it became like a script consultant for Atypical, not script consultant, an autism consultant for Atypical. Just And like, it's like all these people, I graduated with 14 people and they've all gone on to do these crazy and different things. Like, I think one just recorded the score for Lost City and, and it's just, or he works with PNR, Torpak a bunch. I don't know if he did that score, but I think he does, is it Supergirl? What's the show she does on the CW? But so it's just, you know, so I lied my way into that. And I forget what the question was. Sorry.
No, I think I was asking.
Oh, so my parents.
Yes.
About my parents. I'm sorry. So, but they were fine with that. And then when I got out of school and I said, hey, I'm going to move to New York and I have this job offer that's $5.15 an hour with no benefits. They're like, okay, go for it. And it was awful. It was horrible. And my mom would call occasionally. She's like, well, you know, you can always go to medical school if you want. We can help you. You can, which is amazing. That is amazing that I had parents that A, didn't stop me from making this decision, but B, wanted to pay for me to make another decision. I understand that that's a level of privilege and I'm lucky to have had that, but I always said no. And the reasoning was, you're not doing this. I am, yeah. You know, these are decisions I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my life. If I make your decision, that has no consequence on you besides maybe helping me pay for it. But if I fall on my face, that doesn't really affect you. And I grew up in Miami and it was a small part of Miami, but everyone knew my family. My mom was everyone's doctor. And she grew up one of eight children there and everyone knew that family. And I was the middle brother. We all went to the same school. So I was either Alex's brother or Joey's brother. No one was ever like, oh, you're damn. And so I needed, and this is some middle child stuff here. I needed to find a way to make my name. And it's crazy. And this is a horrible part about being a human is I'm in my mid 40s and I'm still trying to figure this stuff out and understand that like under the hood, a lot of my decision-making is this weird, like kind of, I want to be seen, you know, type of thing. And so then I quit that. I tried to travel as much as I could while I still could. A buddy of mine and I, we surfed in Costa Rica for a month and a half. And then I took this job at a record label and it was great. And then I took a sabbatical in the middle to go to Asia for a couple months, on just like these shoestring budgets with the same buddy. Mm. And then I came back and then had this great career. Like I had this great career at Sony, where I was for RCA, it was RCA Jive Label Group. I was responsible for manufacturing all their US products outside of the US and doing digital releases and all that. And I just had enough. And one day I said, you know what, I'm going to move cross country and become a composer. And my parents were like, oh, you're going to do what now? But I was in my mid 30s. I was my own person. And they were like, okay. And it was one of those things, like I was telling you about my wife, she believed in me far more than I did. So did my mom, oddly. Mm. She said, well, you're going to be the one that like blows it out of the water. You're going to, you know, I'm banking on you. I'm going to come retire with you. And it was amazing that she had that faith in me. The part that sucks about that is, you know, she died at 72. And she never really got to see me kind of getting higher up in this. Like she saw me kind of get some fair to middling success. Not that I'm like blowing anything out of the water yet. I plan to. That is the goal, but she never got to be around for any of that. And that's not a regret. I'm sad that she never got to meet her first granddaughter, my first daughter, or any of that stuff. But and my dad growing up, he was half deaf, so he could never hear anything I did. So there's this whole like unpacking of stuff that this is probably the wrong venue for that. But, so they were pushing me to do other things, but they never said no. And when it came down to it, they always said, well, you know, this is your decision. I remember once, you know, my mom was very blunt at times. I broke my nose once because I have questionable hobbies. I snapped it like right flat to my face. And then and then at the gym, someone like straightened it out for me. You can still feel the break. God. And I had like two black eyes and all that stuff. And I called my mom. I was like, I broke my nose. And she's like, well, and she's like, you knew that was going to happen. This was kickboxing. And it's like, you know, that was, I mean, come on. You knew that could happen. And it made sense. You know, it wasn't what I was, oh no, are you okay? Oh, she's like, well, that's what you get. Yeah. And so there was that level of it too. She was supportive, but she was also like, look, you know, if you fail, you fail. That's a risk that you take, you know. Sorry, I went way off the rails on that question.
No, you're all good. And I think the big thing you said earlier, but I think before we recorded, was that you have one chance at this, right? It's one life, you know, you know, and you might as well do it. And I think failing, oh my gosh, I'm going to incite my roommate. He likes it, but he hates it. He always says failing forward. I think I've probably said this to you. Yeah. But it's true though, right? You have to sometimes fail. He also believes that people have to fail for you to succeed, which is a very, you know, blunt way of putting it.
Wait, other people have to fail for you to succeed?
Yeah.
Not
sure if I agree 100% with that one, but
I don't, because the world we live in is getting uglier and uglier, and I kind of want everyone to succeed. Yeah. And look, there's enough to go around, right? Yeah. In theory, there should be enough to go around. And then you can look at it like a rising tide raises all boats, right? Right. Mm. You know, I love to see other people succeed. Look, there are people that I want to see fall flat on their faces, but that's not cool of me. And that's something I'm working through on my own. and it's usually the people that have landed a project that I was this close to getting. Mm. And I'm like, oh, they can go die. But no, I don't feel that way at all. But yeah, I mean, look, you're going to fail. At anything you do, you're going to fail. And it's just, and I'm sure I told you this, I have two little children. And when they learn to walk, it's a harrowing thing. Because they'll stand up and then just flat on their face. Mm-hmm. Or they'll hit the coffee table, they're smash into the wall. And you're like, oh, Jesus. And then they'll cry. And then they'll just get right back up and keep trying. And I'm like, oh, where did we lose that? Where as people, like, at what point are we so beaten that we just stop getting up and trying? Mm-hmm. And that was the beauty of like the nose break. I used to do, I still kind of do, but I stopped as I got older and the pandemic and all that stuff, kickboxing and Brazilian jiu-jitsu and all that stuff. And getting punched in the face sucks. Like having people in my instructors and people I was sparring with went on to become heavyweight contenders in boxing and are in the UFC and stuff like that. I was nowhere near their level. It was like a cat playing with a ball of yarn, and they would hit you and you'd be like, ah, that sucks. But then you're like, you know what? It wasn't that bad. What can happen worse than this?
Mm, yeah.
Right? Like, so like I read some Tim Ferriss stuff. I think he's fine, but there's this subset of people that are like Tim Ferriss fanatics that are a little like bonkers for me. Mm-hmm. But he does a cool thing, which is a little uncomfortable for me, where he'll say, okay, what's the worst scenario that I could possibly be in? He's like, okay, I could not have a place to live. I could be paraphrasing this completely wrong. I could have no food, all that stuff. So he will take a week every quarter or something like that, where he sleeps on his floor or out in the yard with no sleeping bag and just eat oatmeal once a day. And he's like, if I can survive this, I can do just about anything. Right? He's like, if this is as bad as it's going to get, I know I can do this. So why not take the risk?
Hmm.
So in again, like people that like subscribe to like everything he does, they're like a little bonkers, but there's some cool takeaways from that where you're like, with me, like I got punched in the face. I broke this, you know, like, or something. Like 1 year I had I had a cracked rib, 2 sprained knees, 2 sprained ankles. You're like, this sucks, but you know what? I'm okay.
Yeah.
And again, this is speaking from like, I went home to my apartment and turned the lights on and ate my food. So from a very privileged position, considering everything that's happening in the world, I forget where I was going, but you just, yes, failing is necessary, and it's not as bad as we make it out to be.
And would you say that applies? I know I have to let you go soon, but does that also apply to like, because you're saying it also reminds me of like when you're in school and you're always worried about everyone else, right? You're always worried about, oh, this presentation, I'm scared what people are going to think. But really, what's the worst that can happen? Maybe you stutter through a sentence, or maybe you say something wrong, you know, but that, you're going to move on in about 10 minutes. That's why I tell myself before presentations, I'm like, look, and in an hour, I'm going to feel so much better. It's going to be done. I don't have to deal with it anymore. I don't know if it's exactly the same, but.
Yeah, kind of. And also, I know I'm not supposed to curse, but, you know, F everyone else, right? It doesn't matter. And I struggle with this a lot. The world and the way we communicate and the social media is built on comparison. Hmm. And we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people. And that is awful. It robs a lot of the joy from what we're doing. Or joy, I guess, joy, right? Like, I finished this, like, this beautiful documentary. I wrote some of the music that I felt like, oh man, I'm like connecting. This is beautiful. And then I finished it. I was like, I did this. This is amazing. This is beautiful. It's going to be this beautiful movie that's going to touch people. And then my friend that I went to college with, the great composer named Miles Hankins. I don't know if you've interviewed him. He's like, he posted something. He's like, my new movie, No Exit, that I scored with Marco Beltrami is available on Hulu. And I was like, well, good for you. Writing a big old movie with a big old composer. And I let that comparison rob me from my thing.
Yes.
And it's hard. So it's almost like you have to keep blinders on. Mm. It's like you have to keep blinders on. You have to race against yourself. And I'm trying to, I believe in New Year's resolutions. I think it's a little ridiculous, but I still do it where that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to, every time I go into something, be better than I was last time. Mm. Not try and get more success. I love Miles. Miles is a great dude. I was at his wedding. He was at my wedding. We went to college together. He went to college. I'm happy for him. His success is amazing. I need to no longer compare myself to that or to some dude on Instagram. And it's hard. So yes, try not to compare yourself to other people in class. Get through it. Do your best. Yeah. Like, that's it. Do the best that. Yeah.
Well, look, I want to.
Sorry, you know, I don't know if that answered the question.
No, it did, and I think we'll have to talk more about this, because I think you opening that can of worms is very interesting about social media and comparisons. But unfortunately, I don't have that time for you today. But I do find that very interesting.
No, sorry.
Truly. No. It's honestly, we spoke a lot before we recorded, and I appreciate that conversation. It was fun catching up with you, just on a personal note.
Absolutely.
But Dan, you're always welcome back on if you want to come back. Yeah. Well, good luck with the rest of your project. Can you say anything on the record about your projects or not?
I did this beautiful documentary. I don't know where it's getting released. I think they're still finishing it up. I don't know if I can talk about the subject matter of that, but it's beautiful. It's about a hip hop producer that's going through some. It's a documentary, so it's real, about some struggles in his life. And then I'm gearing up to work. I've been doing some work on a documentary about Brandon Lee, which is also, I mean, I just watched a cut of it and it was this beautiful thing. And then I'm doing some other writing projects. And so I'm just trying to do everything I can, but do it well and be happy with it and feel like I'm creating something that I'm proud of and love.
Of course. Well, I'm very excited for that. I'm so happy that, you know, we've been able to talk so much. I think this all started with an interview I happened to be pitched on, you know, months ago. And then I think it's grown into something special. So thank you again for your congratulations and well wishes with NYU.
I'm psyched to hear how it goes.
And everything else you've done for me. So Dan, thank you and have a great day.
Yeah, you too.